tip today in association with Slattery's of Pecan, your main Peugeot dealer for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.
Thanks, Pat. Still a big interest in that piece we did with Nicola Tallant about Joseph O'Callaghan. And the Witness is the name of the book, okay? And the Witness in His Own Words is the proper title for the podcast if you're searching there later on. All right, 1800-938-007. Text, WhatsApp, 083-311-3311. Now, former Tipperary Greens member here, Fran, not a member of ARG, that's the new party we were referring to, but I found them to be quite interesting, and probably because it's a female-led. But they are a voice that needs to be heard in the Dáil, because there is a large cohort of women and men between the ages of 20 and 40 that are environmentally minded and feel like our concerns are not taken seriously. We have also worked this country out of one recession and will through the next one as well. I'm 33 years old and I never felt that any Tipperary TD has represented the concerns of my generation in my entire lifetime. And I think ARG represents a positive, well-needed change in Irish politics. Maybe so, but politics, by the nature of democracy and all of that, it's rather a slow-moving machine. And you'd wonder how soon the kind of change that we spoke about there with David Ahern could possibly come about. But there you go. Maybe I'm just becoming cynical in my old age. Now, we continue with the Walks and Talks series, where, you know the story at this point, I'm dragged off the couch by author, educator and hill walker, John G. O'Dwyer. For this week's hike, it's the 5K Inch Loop Walk, and it brings you along lovely, pleasant, gorgeous countryside and riverbanks and farmland and woodlands and all of that kind of thing. Anyway, this is what happened.
Well, John, it's the usual question. Where the hell are we?
I haven't a clue.
What do you mean you haven't a clue?
I don't know where we are exactly. I mean, did you ever come to this place yourself?
I did.
Bet you gigged here.
I did, for years.
What do you call it?
Well, I call it the Rag. Playing in the Rag, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and, well, actually, you know, there's, because I don't know. I mean, there's so many names for this place. The first thing is, we're in Boula Duff, and that's easy to handle, I think, if you look at the Irish. It's probably Boula Duff, which is a Boula is a milking place, so I don't know why it was black, but the black milking place. Whenever you see the black milking place, Boula Duff. Yeah.
Right.
I don't know why it's black, but anywhere you see Duff in Ireland, List Duff is outside Turles, so that's the Black Fort. Bally James Duff, that would be the town of Black Seamus. You know, Bally James Duff. So Duff. But that's one thing. That's easy to get out of the way. Then you have, we're in the village of Inch. And Inch is an island. Now, you might wonder, well, is there a lake around here or something? There isn't.
No.
But I think what we're talking about, you remember way, way back a long time ago, we went to the Rain of Flann.
Yes.
And that was an island in a bog.
Okay.
So I think what they're talking about here is fertile land that was surrounded by relatively wet land 1,000 years ago. I remember 1,000 years ago, nearer to the Ice Age, so Ireland would have been wetter and boggier anywhere, and there wouldn't have been much drainage carried out as well. So there we are. And then we get to the Rag, and we'll have to appeal to our listeners. I have no idea where the name the Rag came from or what it means.
Well, I was told one time.
Why did you tell me?
Yeah, it was that a rag was put in the window during the War of Independence if there was trouble afoot.
Was that it? Maybe the British soldiers...
it was a signal.
The British soldiers may be coming out from Carlos.
Yes, it was a signal.
Well, dear, I'm learning something
there
as well as that now.
No, that's my understanding of it.
Yeah, yeah. They put another G onto it as well, didn't they? The Rag, you know.
To be sure.
Yeah, the fellow who went, you know, went to a disco in drag, you know. Where we stayed in Tipperary.
So did you say, is there another name?
There is. And then, you know, to cap the whole thing, we're going to walk down the road here now, and the church, which most people would call Inch Parish Church, is called Monroe Church. So to add to the confusion, we have four names. But all I think of is, you know, that there's three names here for the village. So if we think, you know, New York, so good they named it twice. Well, this place, so good they named it at least three times. Named it thrice.
Go on. Let's go and do it. No, Now, John, this is a peculiar little trail, isn't it?
It's between two streams. Well, where we are is now, we're down out on the walk and we're coming up the banks of a lovely little river, the Camogue River. Hmm. And that then, if people want to know, flows down into the Clodagh. And that then goes down to Clonoulty and becomes the Carhan, that's what they know it as, and flows into the River Shore then between Holy Cross and Bohorlahan. So we're in what you would call the catchment area of the River Shore here. But it's beautiful, and you know, it's a lovely walk. It takes about an hour to go around it. But I love this path that goes up along here. It is so tree-lined, so peaceful, and you know, it's flat as well as that. You're loving it. It's accessible to everybody.
Well, it's not contrived either, sure.
No.
It's kind of the way maybe these paths would have been.
And sometimes we over-contrive.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think we go in with too much tarmac, you know, too many beautiful
manicured
gates, that kind of stuff, you know, as well as that. Hello. And, you know, so, no, this is unmanicured, but I absolutely love it. So we can ramble up along then and enjoy this, and we'll talk about some of the history along this area. Sure, all of Tipperary drips with history, and this is no exception.
So we're on a bridge and we're looking to the river or the stream?
Well, I suppose it's a stream, Mr. Camogue, but aren't we lucky? You know, we have a swan family here now.
They're gorgeous.
And they're lovely. Five cygnets and mum and dad. And did you ever know what you should do if you want your partner to be faithful to you right throughout your life?
No.
Marry a swan.
Because they are they?
And they are, absolutely. They see the way they've paired
monogamous,
off there.
Yeah.
They tend to pair off and they will stay together and mourn each other then when one passes on. So there's something wonderful about them. And of course, then they're very family orientated. You wouldn't want to get in there now and start messing around with any of the cygnets because they would put a run on you fairly fast.
What do you mean they mourn?
They'll mourn. In other words, they will go into mourning when the Edward, when their partner passes on. Isn't that wonderful in a way? But now, what type of swan is that?
Ah, sure. Now, John, we're a Muffy and Spare, but I have no idea.
You have no idea. Well, I mean, it's very easy. No, it's the middle of summer in Ireland, right? Mm-hmm. So it has to be a mute swan because they're the native swans.
Ah.
In winter, we get the Hoopers and the Berwick swans come in. Right?
How should I know the difference?
Hey, well, the ones here, they're very easy to recognise, the Irish ones, because they actually have an orange beak, but they have a very, if they turn around, you'll see they have a very distinctive kind of a dark lump there, which is right where we would normally think their nose would be. They're wonderful creatures, and they're very territorial, and these ones have been around here any time I passed for the past month.
Isn't it great? Of Lear.
The children of Lear, exactly. Our Strutton and Wheeler.
Well, John, we're looking over at a house that I know relatively well, when it was a gorgeous restaurant, I knew it.
Yeah, you never found the wine disappointing, I'm sure.
I did not.
It was the one, by the Egan family. But that house goes back to 1720. So it goes back. And the amazing thing was, 1720 was the absolute apex of the penal laws. Yet the Ryans, who are there, remained Catholic right through the penal laws, which lots of people did. But most people who did it managed to lose their lands. They somehow managed to dance on the head of a pin, and they remained Catholic and had a Catholic church in there. And a few families managed to do that. The one that's most famous, of course, would be the O'Connells in Kerry. They were off down in Cahersaveen and Derrynan. But remember, they were well away from the prying eyes of the English establishment. Up here, you weren't. But the Ryans did it extremely well, and there was also the Matthew family, who would have been over there nearby in Anfield, and it was they built the original church in Turles as well as that. So it's not true to say like that all Catholics were totally dispossessed during the penal laws, but an enormous amount were. But I think anyway that very quickly the British began to realise, look, the penal laws weren't going to work. And I think, you know, whatever King George over in England might have taught, the people here on the ground realised the realities. And often, you know, and the Ryans were very much, of course, for a long time, they managed to stay part of the establishment. They were married into the Matthew family, and the Matthew family were actually, one of them was married into the Dukes of Ormond and was actually the mother of the Duke of Ormond at that time.
Oh.
So they had the contacts as well as that. The Dukes of Ormond, of course, would otherwise be known. We come across them all the time. The big wigs, the butlers.
The butlers, of course, right. And of course, we've been talking about Inch House.
Inch House, absolutely. And then, of course, so they moved on, and then it moved on in the 1980s. It was purchased by the Egans, and they, of course, made a great job of it, making a country manor house out of it, a lovely restaurant and that. And now I think what it is actually, it's a house that you can kind of rent it lock, stock and barrel. Mm-hmm. A family, there's a big market for that from abroad. Family can come in, take it over, a group of people completely, and they can do everything within it. So, nice. You know, it, as I say, it continues to prosper, and isn't
and,
it wonderful?
The family making some great black pudding, of course, that's their specialty.
Absolutely famous, isn't that right? You know, who wants the Clonakilty black pudding when you can have the Inch black pudding? Yeah, there we are.
Well, it's warm, John. It's a nice blustery little day, but you were pointing out something gorgeous to me.
Yeah, that's it, that lovely white blossom. So that's the May blossom, you know? And of course, it's synonymous. It's a very historic, and I suppose a lot of superstitions have built up around it. And one is that you should never take it into a house, right? Never take it into a house. It would be bad luck to bring it into a house, even though it's a beautiful blossom. Now, sometimes said the idea behind that is that the crown of thorns on Jesus' head was made from the hawthorn, and it's the hawthorn is where the May blossom grows. But still, it would be precursor to summer in Ireland. And in fact, there was an old saying, never change a clout till May is out. Well, what does that mean? Does it mean you don't take off any clothes until the 1st of May? Or is it when May is gone?
Right.
The 1st of June? But then some people come along and say it's neither. If you never change your clothes until the hawthorn has blossomed, the May blossom is out.
That's very good.
But this is a lovely trail up along here, isn't it? There's so much diversity.
Of course, the reason I love this trail is, guess why?
Guess why? Because there's not a hill. It's just we're in the flat lands of Tipperary.
Oh, don't I love
it. It's as flat as a tip accent, isn't it?
So we're heading towards a graveyard.
We are. We're heading towards Inch Graveyard. And that's very interesting because this really is something that goes back to the Norman period. Now, if we look firstly, how do we know this is the Anglo-Norman period? Well, the first thing is if we look over there, we'll see something. And you remember we saw one of them down in Kilsheelan as well? Do you remember that in Kilsheelan? There was a place where there was a grotto dug into.
Oh, sure, yes.
That's a motte. And that was all. That's how. It was a kind of a do-it-yourself castle, a DIY castle. When you conquered an area, you got in there, and as mentioned that to you before, and you built a motte. And this is how they did it. They would have had raised ground that would have given them, they would have built it up themselves. Then they would have a stockade around it, and it would have given them protection. And that, at the start, is how the Normans conquered Ireland. Later, of course, they were great stone builders, and they built great castles. So they came into places like this, and relatively quickly, I mean, they conquered Ireland because their technology, their organisation and everything else, and their wealth. They were great farmers as well as that. All of those things were an advantage, and the Irish really weren't organised enough to fight them. So very quickly they spread across almost the entire country. But then gradually they began to be driven back, and things happened to them. Firstly, we're in global warming now, but it was actually at that period global dimming, and the climate got a lot colder and wetter, and they were great corn farmers, and the corn didn't do so well. Then the bubonic plague came along, otherwise known as the Black Death, and that devastated their community as well as that. And then some of them began to marry into the Irish, and they became Irish, and they lost their loyalty to the English crown, and in about 200 years, they had been pushed back by the Irish, and they were back when Henry VIII came to the throne in England. They were actually pushed back into a small area called the Pale, which is roughly, I would say, about the size of what is now County Dublin. But then there was the Tudor reconquest of Ireland, and the sad part of our history began there. But that's what they did, and this is Inch Churchyard. So we go inside then.
Let's do it. Oh, this is very ancient, isn't it?
It is, and we're moving back, I think, into the medieval world. Now, duck your head.
Wow.
And come in here. Now, like, what do you think we were ducking our head coming through that lovely doorway, which comes back from the medieval period? Why do you think we had to duck our head?
Is this a private end of the graveyard?
It's not. No, it's not. What you're talking about really is that there was no. It would be back to the medieval period that the tradition would have started of you could not reconsecrate ground, you could not build a church, but you knew that the places where there was abbeys, and there was an Anglo-Norman abbey here, a Catholic abbey, So you knew it was consecrated ground, and therefore you would take your dead and you would bury them in here. And in fact, this was in the penal times, and in fact, one of the things there was that the priests were on the run. So all the priest would ever do is he would come to the outside of the graveyard and he would bless the coffin, but he would scarper her because he could not stay around long enough for the burial in case the redcoats would appear. Now, that was in the worst part of the penal laws, of course. But the thing is, too, to remember, we had to duck our way in there, and to remember that in those days, in the medieval period, if we go back 800 or 900 years, the average height of a man was about the height of a woman today, if you get what I'm talking about. A tall man would be about 5 foot six. Wow. You know, so the doorways are always much smaller, and that's why we are so much bigger now. We always have difficulty going up spiral staircases. It's incredible. So they're the sort of things that change all the time. But I think it's lovely and peaceful when you come in here. This, of course, is the ruins of a church, probably originally at least built by the Normans who came in. And of course, they were Catholics and they remained Catholics, and many of them even remained Catholics after the dissolution of the monasteries.
Well, it was the most beautiful day at the Rag in Spooladuff, however you want to describe that area, but in the wonderful company of John G. O'Dwyer, as usual, another in our series Walks and Talks. One of our listeners on to say, Fran, maybe people don't realise it, but next Monday is the 100th anniversary of Dan Breen's wedding, which took place in Woodingstown in the parish of New Inn. I knew it was in or around this time. All right, thank you very much indeed for that, but only lately, speaking to historian John Connors, we were looking at the wedding picture of Dan Breen, and of course his best man on the day was Sean Hogan, who we were talking about earlier on as well. But it's amazing that they look so happy and content in the photographs when you consider that they were wanted men and that the turmoil that was going on around them at the time. And by all accounts, when the pictures were being taken, Dan Breen had a Mauser pistol on his lap as well, just for fear of unwanted company arriving. But anyway, always extremely interesting. And thank you for reminding me about that. And we will do something about it on Monday as well. 1800 938 007.
Tip FM's Tip Today with Fran Curry.
In association with Slattery's of Pecan, Tipperary's main Peugeot dealer. Slattery's Garage Pecan, the name you can trust for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.